Our information session. I guess we should acknowledge we are hosted on the lands of the Mississauga of the Anishinaabe, the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, and the Wendat. We also recognize the enduring presence of First Nation, Métis, and Inuit people. So welcome tonight to our information session about the restart of school. And I'm sure everybody has been reading the paper, watching the news with a lot of anxiety. And I'm sure we're all getting calls from a lot of families who have a lot of anxiety. And unfortunately, I think it's sort of a chicken and an egg thing. It's hard to tell people what the system will look like when you don't know the rules yourself. And then as you find out what people's decisions are, then that changes everything. And I really appreciate the fact that staff have had to sort of reinvent plan after plan after plan after plan. And so I guess even as of Thursday, the ministry made announcements that may have impacted what the TDSB had published to all of us about what the fall will look like for students. So I'm sure we're all anxious to hear all of that input. I think with respect to a few other things, things like the special education plan, I think it's difficult because obviously whatever they do online, now that online has been told is an option, as well as full day school, that would also have to be added to the special education plan at some point. So I'm sure adjustments to that document are going to have to still happen, as literally thousands of kids are deciding whether they attend school live or not. So there are questions, I think, that we're hoping we get answers to. And I think the important part is that we make sure that we voice those opinions. So it would be great if somebody could take notes for tonight, because maybe if there are questions that aren't answered, that committee, we have a subcommittee that's been planning with Angela about our concerns about our kids. And maybe we could forward those additional questions to her and bring that on Thursday, because there's another meeting of that subcommittee. And again, I guess I understand we've had a lot of controversy through email, but hopefully we can set that aside, because I think there's a lot to talk about what restart's going to look like. And I appreciate the fact that staff have built time to do keep us up to date. So thanks, everybody, and over to you, Angela.
Angela, sorry, before you start, I just saw your little chat about Leanne taking notes, and we know that she always takes notes, but we just thought it might be a good idea maybe for a couple of people on the subcommittee to also just take some notes, because we think there's going to be a lot of questions and a ton of stuff, so we just don't want to miss anything. So that's the only reason why we're just asking if maybe another person or two on the subcommittee just to take as much as possible, because we just know there's going to be a lot of information. That's all. Thanks.
No worries. Thanks, Diane. So, Leanne, once you stop sharing, then perhaps I can share my screen. And I'll pass it to Kathy as we wait for me to set up. So go ahead, Kathy.
Great. Hi, everybody. Welcome to a summer like no other. We really hope that all of you have had a chance to unplug and to rest and relax and really try to regroup in what has become our next normal. We as staff have not, let's just put it that way. There has not been a vacation, there has not been weekends, and it's been really quite extraordinary for staff over the last 5 months, obviously since March, but really over the last 2 months, where we received notification from the ministry about what reopening schools or return to school would look like in September. And then over the past several weeks, 5 or 6 weeks, things have changed many times. So as Nora said, as we began the night, you know, you've read a lot of things in the media. I would just want to warn you, don't really believe everything that you read. There are a lot of things that have been going on, and I can't commend all of our staff enough in terms of their ability to be flexible, to be resilient, to be persistent, and to have the optimism that they have, and really it is about what we can do to support our students with special education needs, our families, our staff that serve our students. And so I wanted to say that just to begin with. And then also, we're not going to get into the details of what the models are going to look like in terms of returning to school. There's a lot of other information that we'll be sharing. We will be taking, we were on ministry phone calls up until, we still are as we're going over the weekend and this morning. And so we will be updating our model and bringing it to the committee of the whole tomorrow night. And so we'll be able to give you an update after that and obviously share, you can all share what comes out of committee of the whole. So I just wanted to say that, and just so you know that we are working really diligently. The subcommittee, we are taking feedback from trustees, from parents, from whoever wants to share their feedback, just so we can ensure that our plans are as fulsome and as detailed as they need to be. And I know Alexander is going to be joining us a little bit late on our call today. We will congratulate him when he joins of his appointment as chair of the board. But we have been working really closely with the Board of Trustees throughout this. So I wanted to say that. And then the other piece of information I wanted to just share, because I know it came up in emails, is about the Zoom meetings. And so, we have been using Zoom for SEAC. We have been, we purchased licenses for all of our schools to use for all of the special education meetings, ISTs, IPRCs. And so that will not change. Our senior leaders have access to Zoom. All of our principals have access to Zoom to continue. And teachers can continue to access the video conferencing tool, the free version, or schools can purchase a license if they wanted to do more than that. But I just wanted to address that, because I know, David, you raised that. So just to say that we are continuing with Zoom, and actually it's becoming the tool of choice for our senior team, where WebEx is we're leaving behind and joining into the Zoom world. So I think that's good news for us. So I will turn it over to Angela and team, and we will walk through the plans. They're pretty detailed. There's lots of different areas to go through, and we'll figure out how to stop along the way for questions. But we know from other forums that we've been in, both ward forums, PX conversations, and board meetings or information sharing with trustees, we would like to get through as much information as we can before we start taking questions, because we just know from previous times, previous venues, that we tend to get bogged down in the questions, and we hope that many of your questions will be asked through the content. So with that, I'm just going to turn it over to Angela.
Great. Thanks, Kathy. Hello, everyone. I hope all of you have had some time this summer to relax and enjoy and spend with family and friends despite the unique circumstances. I, too, want to acknowledge the efforts of the team, truly a sign of resilience and determination to set students and families up for success. So, If you look at the Return to School PowerPoint at the TDSB website, it's truly an overview. This one is a special focus only on special education. So everything that we will talk about focuses on special education, but the guiding principles will be the same. And so when we look at our guiding principles, we again prioritize health and safety first and foremost. We want to ensure that we support the well-being of staff, students, and our families. We want to create predictable Learning environments. I can barely see that screen. I'm going to have to go into my screen. So hang on a second. Here we go. We want to ensure that we are fostering connections to for our students, for both staff and peers, ensure equity of access, consider the needs of our staff, students, and families when we are supporting them either face-to-face and or remotely. Definitely being adaptable and flexible. As Nora said, a lot of our families have high anxiety. We're hoping to provide information to address that anxiety, to hopefully some of the questions you have we can answer. And again, everything we do is supporting our finances and making sure that we're financially feasible and sustainable in our actions. Also joining me today in presenting this presentation is Gary Green from Transportation. We have Patrick Mohammed from Occupational Health and Safety. We have Marcia Dunlop-Powers, who will address the mental health and well-being. And we have Janine Small and Joy Ryder, who are our CAPS and will also help present today. The next slide, please, Leanne. So all of you received, and great thanks to David Lepofsky, a report from the Accessibility Education K-12. And just like we are using those guiding principles that I shared in slide two, we're using this information to also help steer our direction in ensuring that we do remove barriers that some of our families and students could potentially face. So thank you for that. We've already shared it with our staff subcommittee, and we are meeting with our...
Must be in the back of my car then.
Oh, someone has to go on mute. So these pieces, and you'll see some of these embedded in today's presentation and some that we are working through, because again, we want to make sure that these pieces are addressed. Next slide, please. So just to set the context then, we both Janine and I sit on a central steering return to school committee. Janine is on the operational team and I'm on the programming side with Kathy, and Karen Faulkner oversees the operational side. And from that steering committee, special education has two subcommittees on the go. One is a staff subcommittee, which is a multidisciplinary team, which includes principals from congregated sites, principals from regular schools that house ISP classes. We have support staff. We have people from occupational health and safety. The other day we included transportation. So we've tried to include as many staff voices as possible to help us with everything we need to consider, again, to support our family and students up for success. We also have a very important group from our SEAC subcommittee. And we have another committee meeting lined up next week as we're waiting to share the committee to the committee of the whole. Once we have that meeting where the trustees and associate directors share the next pivot with as a result of the ministry's announcement last week, and we could then delve deeper to see again, based on that new information, how do we tighten up what we've already discussed. Okay, so that's the context, and now I'm going to pass it on to Janine, and she's going to walk you through the next few slides.
Thank you, Andrea, and good evening, everyone. I'm sorry, I'm just going to stay off on camera because I'm having intermittent bandwidth troubles here tonight with my connection. All right, so the next few slides to going through in terms of supporting students with special education needs regular class. So students, we have a wide range of students with special education needs in regular class and ISP classes. In terms of students with special education class, there are three settings. So the classroom teachers, special education teachers will continue to work together and collaborate in ensuring that whatever the setting is, whatever the support is,
Okay, so Janine, if you can hear us, you went quiet. We lost your sound.
Okay.
So maybe I'll
take over. Okay. So let me just get back to my slides because I can barely see that. Oh, are you back, Janine?
I'm back. It just cuts and it comes right back. Okay, so slide five. Sorry, the next slide, Leanne.
Janine, we missed a little bit before.
Oh, sorry. So this slide here talks about the regular class setting. So there's three settings. The first one is regular class with indirect support, in which a classroom teacher gets support from a special education teacher on site. So that continues by remotely or... face-to-face. On the next slide, am I frozen?
No, go ahead.
I'm trying to find, I actually only have these five slides. So let me look at the email and try to find it.
Oh, okay. So why don't I do this?
I just asked that whatever you've got on the slide, if you can read it out, since I obviously can't read it.
Absolutely. Are you able to see the full, sorry, are you able to get the full version, Leanne?
I'm just reopening the PowerPoint that Angela sent me.
In the meantime, you want to finish with slide six, Janine? Okay, so I guess, Janine, I'll just continue. And Janine, once you get your voice back on, just jump in. So with the regular class, we have the second designation for regular class is regular class with resource assistance. So students who do get this, who have this designation, will also continue to receive direct support individually or in small groups within the regular class from a special education teacher. If the student has elected remote learning, support will be provided remotely. And again, I'm reading it to support David. So if I'm going too fast, let me know, David. Regular class with withdrawal assistance. Students with this designation will also continue to receive direct support outside of the classroom for less than 50% of the school day from a special education teacher, and again, either face-to-face or remotely. Withdrawal support can continue while maintaining safe practices, such as wearing a mask and keeping the group small. And so we continue, because we want to continue to encourage inclusion of students with special education needs in regular class, consider minimizing the withdrawal of students to reduce contact outside of their cohort. We encourage support as much as possible be provided in the regular class setting. So in other words, students who have HSP, some families are asking, do they still leave their classroom to go to the HSP classroom? Well, as you know, we're trying to phase out HSP. We're trying to move away from that model where the resource teacher goes into the classroom to work with the students. However, case by case, if a student does require to be removed for whatever reason, we'll find a way to support and accommodate that student. Next slide. Are you able to go, Janine?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead. Okay, I can't really hear you, so I'll continue. So special education class with partial integration, that's the next designation if you're in a special education class. So students in this designation will continue to have access to a special education class for at least 50% of the school day and can continue to be integrated with a regular class for at least one instructional period daily. This includes students in HSP and some ISP programs. And again, I've already jumped ahead and talked about the whole phasing out of HSP. Special education class full-time, a student in this designation will continue to access a special education class daily and will be supported by the special education class teacher. Integration should continue and students should be considered as part of a cohort of students.
Angela, sorry, are we supposed to be looking at a slide right now? Because we're not seeing anything. We're just seeing your list of files. Like you don't have, your file's not up, if that's what we're supposed to be looking
at. Those are not, so Leanne, are you not presenting the PowerPoint?
I thought that I was sharing it right now. I downloaded the whole thing.
No.
Is it not showing?
Yeah, it's a desktop. Like it's a list of files, yeah.
Okay, hold on.
And there's no way you can disable whatever you need to disable so that I can present?
You should be able to.
Just it says I'm not allowed.
Okay.
Okay, that's okay. Go ahead and just share.
I can change and make you the host and then you can...
Okay.
Share.
That would be great.
You should be able to now.
Can you all see that?
Yes.
Yeah, we can see. Can you put it in presentation mode, Angela, so it becomes bigger and we don't see the note?
Yeah, I'm just trying to find it.
Up at the top, right. Top right. Right. Up near the share. There's a share.
It says button. Present. Yeah.
There it is.
Is that better?
No. Click. Did you click it?
Click present.
Yeah, I did.
Hmm. Okay. Sorry, everybody, for our technical difficulties.
Oh, it's uploading. It's uploading. I can see it. It's uploading. It should be up soon. How about now?
No.
It's probably just
It says you are sharing your screen.
No, we see it. We see it. It's smaller because it's not in presentation mode.
No, it is in presentation mode.
No, it's
you
not.
Do you still see the sidebar?
Yeah. We do.
Okay, give it some time to catch up.
It could be a delay mode. Yeah, I will continue.
Yeah, I think it's a delay. Because my screen is showing, because I did go and present.
Okay, let's just move on.
All right. So Janine, are you good?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yep. So we're on special education class full time.
Okay. So with the special education class full time, the students are in this designation will continue to access special education class daily. And will be supported by a special education teacher. Integration, we encourage integration to continue and should be considered as part of a cohort of students, i.e. keeping in mind the limit with elementary being 50 students and with secondary being that limit with 100 students. But again, a preference with, you know, whatever that might be shared tomorrow in terms of models. Okay, the next slide, please.
Students with medical complexities. Can you see that one?
No, we gotta click to the next slide.
Oh, I did.
So in terms of with students with medical complexities.
I think we need to forego Janine because Janine, you keep on fading in and out.
Okay, so I'll just continue. Okay, but you can at least see, did it catch up? Are you on students with medical complexities?
Not yet, no.
That's ridiculous. Anyway, all right, let me just continue. So schools will continue to work with their respective community care coordinators and service providers to ensure timely and appropriate scheduling for students who require nursing as part of the return to school transition. Examples, scheduling of students that require time-sensitive nursing interventions, such as G-tube feeding and aerosol-generating procedures. This was of critical concern to many of our families, and I know our SEAC committee brought it up, as well as our principals. And so Janine has been meeting weekly with our community care coordinators to ensure that the students who do require this is on that list. So as soon as we know if they're coming to school, we can activate the next steps. I'm moving now to elementary intensive support program. Elementary ISP classes are capped at 6 to 16 students, excluding gifted, depending on the ISP program. Elementary students in ISP classes will come to school daily and be considered their own cohort. This includes congregated sites and ISP classes in regular K-8 schools, including elementary gifted classes, which are capped at 25. There are a total of 6 congregated elementary sites where students will be able to attend daily. Those schools include Beverly, Lucy McCormick, Park Lane, Seneca, Sunnyview, and William J. McCordick. Please note that 2 of those schools do have secondary age students, but will follow the elementary school model. I'm moving now to secondary ISP classes. Secondary ISP classes are capped at 6 to 16 students, excluding gifted, again, depending on the ISP program. Secondary students in DD ISP programs capped at 10 will attend daily as they are grouped as a cohort and can take their special education classes together. Now, I'm going to say that we wrote that they will follow the semester track model, and I know we're still, as Kathy mentioned, things are changing daily, and so for now, this is what we're saying, that our DD students will follow the semester track model. Several concerns came around the quadmestered. The quadmestered model are for students in the regular school program, and students and some of our ISP students, which I'll talk about now. So ISP classes with integration, including gifted. So students in the secondary ISP, including gifted, who are typically timetabled into special education classes and regular school courses will come to school as their peers following the secondary school model in order to ensure integration. Secondary students in an ISP capped at 6 to 16 students program can attend as one cohort. I know everyone was saying, but the cap is at 15. In the secondary school, typically the ISP classes that it would include MID, LD, ASD, DHH, and PD would be cohorted with their peers for non-special education courses. And we're saying okay for 16 because typically the square footage of secondary classes are larger and physical distancing can be better accommodated. So we're not worried about the one extra student.
The technical difficulties still, where you are stuck on this last, your slide hasn't moved for a while. So you're talking,
really?
Yeah, we're still back at that special education class, partial integration slide.
Let me stop sharing. I'm going to stop sharing and then I'm going to share again.
Angela, you may want to, or if Janine has the PowerPoint as in its totality, save it as a PDF, and then share the PDF. I think it's too much. It's so large that it's taking it, not letting us do it over the bandwidth.
Okay, so Janine,
I've shared the PowerPoint with Leanne. So if Leanne can send that to the group, that would be great.
Great, that's perfect.
Yeah. So okay.
If Leanne sends it out to everybody, then we know we're on slide 11. People can follow along.
Okay, so hang on a second. Let me just, okay. So do you want me to wait till you all get your?
Yeah, I'm going to send it right now.
So I think
I ask you a question. Are you sharing your screen, your actual computer, or a deck?
Who, me?
Yeah, Angela. Are you sharing a deck or your actual computer screen?
My computer screen, because when I go to share.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's fine. Your
desktop?
So right now I'm on present mode and sharing, but you're still not seeing
it.
Yeah,
now it's good.
Okay, we can see it now. It's in present mode.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
Now.
We're good now?
Yep.
Well, let's not get too excited.
All right, so I'm on secondary ISP classes. So gifted ISP classes are capped at 30, students, and will be divided into two cohorts for special education and non-special education classes. Secondary schools with ISP classes, including DD, will follow a dual track semester, that is semester for students in DD programs and a quadmester for the rest of the school. So again, regular high school, you have the students in the regular class, they will be following the quadmester. Students in DD will be following semester. There has been some questions about, can schools do things a little bit differently? And the answer is principals are to work with their superintendents to do what's in the best interest of students in collaboration with families. For times the students will not be in class, the asynchronous learning, the teacher will set up scheduled check-ins to ensure differentiated support is afforded to this cohort of students. So when we're talking about remote learning, again, we want to make sure that the asynchronous learning is differentiated. There are a total of 6 congregated secondary school sites where students can attend daily. These sites will follow the semester track, and they're Central Etobicoke, Drury, Frank Oak, Maplewood, Sir William, and York Humber. Okay. I'm not going to really go through this because this has changed, and so we're waiting to see what our next step is in regards to what the secondary model will look like. I'm going to pass this on to Joy Ryder.
Hello, everyone. So I'm going to be talking about what many of you probably know as Section 23 that then changed to Care, Treatment, Custody, and Corrections, or CTCC, and now has a new name, ECPP, Education and Community Partnership Program. So we partner, TDSB partners through funding from the Ministry of Education, with a variety of agencies throughout the city who are funded by either MCCSS or the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care. So MCCSS stands for the Ministry of Children, Community, and Social Services. That's just to give you a very brief background for people who need that brief background. And we serve students from 4 through 21. I'm going to read the slide as was requested, and then I'll just talk to it briefly. So each agency will have a return to school plan that will be developed in collaboration with TDSB and that will adhere to Ministry of Education guidelines as well as the guidelines of the Ministry of Children, Community and Social Services and or the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care. The plans will vary depending on whether the classroom is located within a hospital setting, in one of our TDSB schools, or in another setting where there are specifications that will require more flexibility, such as youth justice. Student numbers in the ECPP per class are less than the ministry guidelines for mainstream schools, and all students in ECPP, I still get caught up in that acronym, programs should be attending full days from a TDSB perspective, unless families select remote learning. However, in working with a partnership, there is consistently the need for compromise as perspectives differ. So students will be offered a full educational program. I'm working currently with the various agencies and they have their own perspectives. So I have to show a lot of flexibility and collaborative skills in order to make it all work, but we are on the road to making it work and providing care and treatment and education in a cohesive manner or as cohesively as we possibly can.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, so we moved to remote learning, and so PPM 164 was recently sent out, and the link is live at the bottom. The three pieces that the PPM highlight for supporting students with special education needs are the following. Where appropriate, educators should provide more opportunities than the minimum requirements for synchronous learning for students with special education needs, based on their individual strengths and needs, and provide differentiated support and instruction. Educators should continue to provide accommodations, modified expectations, and alternative programming to students with education needs as detailed in their IEPs. If it is not possible to meet a student's need through synchronous learning, educators and families will work together to find solutions. And that's the key message that we continue to go back to. School boards are encouraged to provide continued access to assistive technology, including special equipment equipment, where possible, to support students with special education needs as they participate in remote learning. In situation where access to assistive technology is not feasible, educators are expected to work with students and parents to determine workable solutions on an individual basis. And we'll talk more about C and where we are with that as we continue. But again, I wanted to make sure that you're all aware that we're using PPM 164 to help guide our practice. So the structure that we are hoping to implement includes daily attendance. Daily attendance will be taken if the student is doing the remote learning. We're still looking, from my understanding, 300 minutes of learning opportunities, both synchronous and asynchronous. Synchronous learning can include whole group instruction, guided instruction, and or individual contact. We're also asking teachers to do a check and connect, not only to support the student with programming, but also with well-being. Asynchronous independent work available in Google Classroom or Brightspace, and parents and guardians will receive a timetable so that there is some predictability. Again, the key message that we're giving our schools is to work with families to better understand their needs so that whatever the timetable will look like is supportive of the family as well as the student's IEP. Digital and non-digital, students will continue to access their C devices and equipment. So we did not implement a return of all the C equipments that were sent out back in May, June, April, May, and June. So students still have access to those. Should the family choose remote, non-digital, the teacher will continue to program for the student based on IEP strengths and needs, and the school will arrange for family access of non-digital resources. Again, things might change from this, but for now, this is the direction. And remote learning website will continue to be updated. And so going back to one of the recommendations from the report from David's group was having a hub of resources. So we'll continue to update that. Oops, regular class, students with special education needs in regular class with resource assistance or withdrawal assistance who elect remote learning will have a teacher assigned from the current school or perhaps another to support their learning. And so they will have access to their teacher as well as access to resource assistance. Remote learning for ISP classes. Students with special education needs in an ISP who elect remote learning will have a teacher from the current school or other to support remote learning. Schools will work in collaboration with employee services to ensure teachers assigned to remote learning have spec ed qualifications. So again, we want to make sure that we can provide the most robust programming and ensuring that our teachers have the spec ed quals. Learning focus for remote learning. Learning will be based on the overall expectations of the Ontario curriculum, the kindergarten program, and or the alternative curriculum. Schools will follow the IEP requirements. Teachers will work collaboratively with families and the IEP team to ensure the IEP reflects learning goals, updates, assessments, and evaluations that reflect the remote learning environment. And finally, the classroom teacher will program for students based on IEP learning goals. All right, IEP plan. Let me just take a drink. Okay, so schools will follow the 30-day IEP requirement as per Reg 181. Learning goals will be, again, created collaboratively with the IEP team and parents to address both face-to-face and remote learning scenarios. Teachers will continue to be responsible for student programming. Again, both face-to-face and remote. It's the teacher who is responsible for that. Teachers will continue to ensure IEPs are updated at each reporting term, and they will collaboratively, teachers and support staff will collaboratively support synchronous and asynchronous learning for all students. And schools will accommodate students who require non-digital resources. We did get questions around IST and SST, so meetings can be scheduled as usual once per month and or depending on student needs. Principals will have autonomy to hold these meetings meetings using either one or a hybrid of both virtual AODA platform. And as you heard, schools can access Zoom. And we said a hybrid because sometimes you may have the principal at the school and the teacher might be at the school and the family wants to stay virtual. And so we can do a hybrid. Paraprofessionals will be included as usual, and they too will be in attendance. IPRCs and SEPRCs. So IPRCs will resume remotely upon written parental requests and school for one of the three: an increase in level of support, a change of exceptionality, students seeking a change of ISP. So that's pretty standard. Once IPRC's committees are established for this school year, all IPRC's can resume. And again, that is our typical standard. Every year we come back, we create IPRC committees, provide the training, and then we're good to go. Schools will continue to establish an IPRC committee for level 3 original gifted with support of special education inclusion consultants and schedule meetings remotely. SEPRCs, as a reminder, are not ministry mandated. However, meetings for students with complex medical needs can continue. Over the summer months, as you recall, we had a few or several outstanding assessments that required to be completed. And so we had psychologists complete the outstanding assessments. So now that they are completed, the next step is the school and the family receive it. If criteria is met, then the IPRC can move forward. Itinerant and regional support services continue with referral as usual and consider the transition of students who receive Tier 3. And again, whether it's remote or face-to-face, they can access these regional support services. Minimize school visits when possible by providing virtual options. And for students who choose remote learning, support will be provided virtually. Summer transition day, as you recall, I had shared earlier, I think it was in June, that the ministry had provided funding to support the summer transition of students with high special education needs as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic school closure. Schools with intensive support programs received funds to support the transition of students with high special education needs the last 2 weeks leading up to their return to school in September. So schools will determine how to best use the funds to support the summer transition for their students, considering that many students returning back to school after an extended time away will require additional support to relearn and adjust to new routines associated with the measures from TPH as it relates to social distancing, cohorting, and changes to school and classroom setting and routines. And so just to be clear, every ISP class will have a teacher and support staff. They are invited to come back to support the students for a day. And it's not a full day. It'll be part of a day. And again, each principal, as I said, will have autonomy of how that would look like. Special equipment amount. Beginning in September, I'm very excited about this. Beginning in September 2020, C equipment will be tracked in SAP CRM. So that's our system, our computer system. So schools will be sent their C inventory to confirm. Training and support will be available in September 2020. So in other words, we'll be able to have one tool that will be able to tell us where every C equipment in the system is, who it belongs to, when training happened, so on and so forth. So it's a really great tool that was much needed, and finally it's going to land. Students will continue to have access to the devices that they have been sent at the onset of our transition to remote learning in March due to school closures. The decision of returning the device to school daily or keeping it at school or home can be made in collaboration between the school and the student and family if they choose to do face-to-face. Accessibility, use of board-approved synchronous and asynchronous learning platforms. So we, as you heard, we did the audit and Zoom came on top, and so it makes sense for us to move in that direction. And again, David, thank you for that little nudge. Encourage that the use of accessible features, including closed captions, are enabled, and monitoring student resources to support the delivery of remote learning. PPE, I'm going to pass it to Patrick Mohammed.
Hi, guys. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
I'm going to keep my video off because I'm going to have issues with my bandwidth as well. So we are in the process and have already landed to all our schools masks. I think by this Wednesday we'll have face shields all distributed to the schools as well. The other types of PPE for spec ed use, things like gowns, gloves, are available, and we're asking the sites that need them to start ordering. So I think I shared earlier on today a catalog that the distribution center has developed for us. And it gives you an idea of the different types of PPE and supplies, such as obviously goggles and gloves and disinfecting wipes and those types of things. They are available. We've got lots in, and we're asking that those sites that need it start ordering their PPE, face coverings, and those things for the special use that they need, for example, cleaning up bodily fluids and those types of things. So they're ready. If you guys can encourage your groups to start ordering what they need, and it'll be there. It'll be there for probably they're doing 3-day delivery at most, so you'll get it in about 3 days.
Thanks, Patrick. I'm just going to read the slide as requested so that David can be supported. So what it says is initial PPE will be provided by the board for all students and staff and delivered to schools prior to school reopening. School administrators can order PPE through TDSB Distribution Center based on the needs of staff, surgical masks, gloves, gowns, face shields, etc., and students' non-surgical masks or face coverings in their ISP classes. The TDSB Distribution Center has been given a list of congregated sites and schools with ISP classes to flag as priority schools due to the unique circumstances they support. And again, this, thank you, Patrick, for accommodating this. This came out from the subcommittee group. Also under PPE, it says, although masks are required for students in grade 4 to 12, exceptions will be made for students with special education needs if required. We understand that not all students will be able to come with a mask or put or keep the mask on. And so we're working with staff to make sure that they understand the exceptions. Instructional information and training will be provided regarding the proper use of masks. And thank you to Patrick Mohammed's team for following up with that. And then in regards to a student screening tool and screening tools for students who are nonverbal, we've provided some live links there that was shared with us through TPH. Patrick, did you want to talk about some of the training that's coming up for our staff for September 1st?
Sure. Briefly, we're asking staff to look at basically a slide deck with some video clips to show how to put on masks, why you put on masks in the first place, how to, you know, the different strategies to prevent a droplet transmission, especially in settings where we know that student may need some support, such as direct care, feeding, or assistance with hand hygiene. So we've got some different types of assistance videos that helps advise staff on how to put on gloves, how to take them off. There's a sequence of events that need to occur to make sure that you're not, quote unquote, contaminating yourself by thinking you're doing the right thing. So, you know, same thing with masks. It will be an adjustment for all staff. Any school-based staff is required to wear these medical masks that the province is providing, and we have shipped them out already to the schools. The schools will get another wave of PPE, but I know one of the questions in the chat line is, why wait? Well, we have sent what we believe you guys need, but there may be things that you need that we are not aware of, and that's why we're asking the schools to order what they need. This is my understanding, Angela, is that this is something that they would do anyways this about this time of year, and so the process shouldn't be any different.
Correct. Okay, so now we're moving to transportation, and I'm going to call on Gary. So thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you for having me. And if anyone has any questions, if possible, if you can just ask at the end of these two or three slides that we have here, just because I do have another thing that I have to do immediately following, if that's at all possible. So with transportation, just want to reinforce for everybody that the top priority for transportation to start the year is special education students. And I'll explain to you how we're putting particular focus for spec ed students. So to begin the year, the buses will be running at full capacity on a staggered start with a seating plan for all students. We are recommending that windows are open where possible, and siblings and students in the same class can sit together. Masks are required for all bus riders who don't have an exemption. So we do understand that some students will not be able to wear the masks, and we'll work with the schools in order to process that. We will have enhanced cleaning of all the buses, including wiping down on all high-touch surfaces between runs. So in between the runs, as well as at the end of the day. And special education students will be prioritized for busing to start the year. And so as a result, TDSB and TCDSB will be proceeding with the following staggered start for student transportation services to begin the school year. During week one of the school year, so September 8th to 11th, only students with special education needs will be provided with student transportation. To be clear, that means everyone in the wheelchair vehicles, the minibuses, and minivans. And so the larger vehicles, which would also include the gifted students, those will not be running to start in the first week. It will just be the smaller vehicles. And the reason that we're doing that is just so that we can ensure that there are sufficient drivers and that there's no interruption to service in that first week. Beginning the second week, assuming that everything is on track and there are no concerns around extra call-ins of drivers and what have you, then all other eligible students will be provided with the student transportation. Like I said, if there's a driver shortage or other unforeseen issues related to COVID-19, the remainder of the students may need to be pushed back, but the spec ed students will continue. So some of the safety measures that have been put in place in order to ensure a safe startup for students and drivers within the student transportation services include requiring that all students wear non-medical face coverings, and again, exceptions for those with medical or other special exemptions, requiring that all bus drivers wear medical masks and or face shields. And so they cannot wear anything that inhibits their ability to drive. And so they won't be wearing the face shield while they're also wearing the mask. So when they'll put the face shield on is when they have a stop and they have a student that is boarding the bus, then they'll put the face shield on. So it's in no way inhibiting their ability to drive. We'll be assigning seats for students. They will be assigned with their siblings as well, and we'll be making all efforts to cohort classrooms and have them seated together. There will be enhanced cleaning, as mentioned, of high-touch surfaces, including the seats, the inside hand railing, interior windows and walls. This will be done before and after each shift, as well as in between runs. And there are a number of additional health and safety protocols, but just wanted to give you the overview there. Okay. So leading up to the first day of school, parents, guardians will receive an automated phone call from TSTG confirming their child's start date. So some will be, as we mentioned, week one or week two. So to avoid confusion, people will be getting a call specifically that you will be receiving a bus in week one or in week two. Student-specific route information will be available during the week of August 24th. And to access the child's information, they can go through the transportation portal, or there's a phone number that's provided to call 647-790-3829. For elementary, busing for students in elementary will have pickup and drop-off times that reflect full day school learning times, For secondary, I do understand there may be some additional review that's going on right now for secondary, but busing for students in DD ISP will have pickup and drop-off times that reflect full-day learning. Busing for students in an ISP class capped at 6 to 16 students who are integrated in courses will have pickup and drop-off times as per the alternate secondary model.
Thanks so much, Gary. So before we move on to mental health, I want to honor your time. I know you have to get off. And so do we have any specific questions for Gary? I can't see my chat when I'm sharing. So Nora.
Yeah. So right now, there's nothing specific for Gary, but I would, if anybody does have any, could you just remind me to put an X in there? And then we'll just deal with those for now. And then any other questions afterwards. I don't see anything yet.
Well, I thank you all for your time, and if questions should arise, please feel free. I'm sure the committee can pass on the questions to me, and I'd be happy to provide responses.
Thanks so much.
All right, take care now.
All your work, Gary.
All right, thank you all.
Thanks. And I'll pass it now to Marcia for the mental health and well-being.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for having me to this meeting, and a special thanks to Angela and Special Ed for the lengths they go to for including professional support services in all that they're doing. Just to remind everybody, professional support services includes psychology, social work, attendance, speech language pathologists, occupational and physiotherapists, child and youth workers, and child and youth counselors. So it is a large group. So we all know that returning to school after many months will require time to address social and emotional needs of students. And I might add, we're well aware and have been working with School Mental Health Ontario around things like anxiety and depression, but we also have to be mindful of the well-being of students. We have some exceptionally resilient kids and some students who have learned a lot of coping skills, and we need to work to enhance and strengthen those as well. So we're really working to build capacity to look at the well-being as well as the mental health. And we know all staff have a role to play in supporting students' mental health and well-being. And building those relationships or connections are really important. And we offer support and building the capacity of school-based staff to help ease the transition back to school and help meet the needs of all students. And as well, over the summer, we've used some of our summer funding to help run drop-in groups for parents as well to help ease their anxiety, because we certainly know the impact of parental anxiety on the students. We know from the student survey, and there's been a number of them, that about half of the students are concerned about getting used to school routines again, and about one-third were concerned about getting used to in-person interactions with teachers and peers, and not being able to interact with friends like they used to, and coping with their fears and anxiety. As well, we've heard from some of the kids that they've gotten quite comfortable at home, and they're doing quite well at home. And then there's the fear of, oh, do I have to go back out there? Will kids make fun of me? How am I going to get along? And kids with social anxiety are even more prone to worrying about what happens. Next slide, please. One quarter to one third of students noted that the following would help them feel more comfortable at school: having a relaxing and calming place to go to in schools. They feel overwhelmed. A lot of work has been done by School Mental Health Ontario on the welcoming classroom. Support for redeveloping school routines, support with social emotional learning skills, and then additional information to support their mental health and well-being, and the support of our social workers, psychologists, guidance counselors, and the child and youth workers and child and youth counselors, as well as our OTPT staff and our speech language staff. So we've all been working on how can we support the needs of our students in a variety of ways, quite recognizing that there'll be different needs from different kids and at a different level. We'll provide students with a blended model of support, including both in-person and virtual supports, including office hours, wellness clubs and social community circles, crisis support, and clinical counseling as appropriate. And again, I'd like to put a point out that over the summer, we have done one-on-one counseling virtually. Some of our occupational physiotherapists have, on very special occasions, gone into homes because kids are growing and they're outgrowing the equipment they have and things like that. We're doing everything we can to support the students. There will also be support for students at transition points, like returning to school, attending a new school, those important grade 8s to grade 9 years, and participating and engaging in e-learning. We know that sometimes it's rather comfortable at home, and so reaching out and engaging kids in the learning programs. And so we're going to do as much as we can to encourage and support the opportunities to be welcomed by and connected to other students. Next slide, if there is one.
No.
Okay.
Good. Thank you. So we just have a few more slides left and then we can open it up to the questions. So PR 699 and safety plans, we will be continuing to provide ongoing support and training for nonviolent crisis intervention. That's through Patrick's team. And personal protective equipment training, as he mentioned. Safety plans will also continue on a needs basis. So safety plans will be reviewed and updated annually by the school and in consultation with the families. And again, that's for face-to-face. The reason I added this slide, organizational policy and procedures, as you recall, I mentioned the report that David's team sent out. And so when we look at these policies and procedures that have been created to help and support schools and families, we need to be very intentional in ensuring that these same tools that were meant to help do not hinder or create a barrier for our students with special education needs. An example would be, I had a conversation today with David, and we were talking about PR 724, refusal to admit. So how are we ensuring that we support our staff when a student does not follow physical distancing, not because he or she chooses not to, but because of the child's cognitive ability, for example? What can we do to support that school to say, no, that is not a reason for refusal to admit? So really making sure that we understand potential barriers that could land for our students and being very mindful to ensure that we preempt and get ahead of it so that our families don't have to face any kind of organizational or systemic barrier. So that's why that's included. And then finally, the PA Day Professional Learning, September 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. So professional learning and capacity building opportunities will be provided to educators who support students with special education needs and will focus on developing high levels of digital competencies using Google Classroom and Brightspace learning platforms. Again, they'll have access to Zoom should it be required to support any of our families and or staff. Training, as I mentioned, around PR 699 and safety plans. And if I haven't mentioned, one of the other things we're very proud of is moving safety plans onto our SAP. Up until now, safety plans have been paper pencil, but now they'll all be online and easier to support the student and the staff as the child moves from one school to another.
IEP development and transitions, the C inventory on SAP again, PPM 140, so there'll be work around the ABA, and PPM 156, supporting students with transitions and learning around accommodations and modifications with a specific focus on remote learning. And as stated, the occupational health and safety piece that Patrick's team will be providing around health and safety training, personal protective equipment, use and other safety protocols. All right, so we have come now to the end and we'll open it up for questions.
Angela, I'm just going to, there's been a scattered question throughout, so I have a list here that I'm going to start with, and then for anybody else who wants to ask questions, if you could just, probably easiest thing to do like we've done in the past is just put an X instead of your whole question, and then we'll let you ask it in the next order. But right now, the people who have commented or asked questions, and we'll start with them. So this is the order I have so far. We're going to go with Julie, Melissa, Steve, and Olga first, and then we'll start with all the X's that are coming up on the screen now. So Julie, okay. Do you want to start?
Yes. Can everyone hear me? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. Okay,
perfect. So I just wanted to first start off by saying I'm so impressed with how much I've been on the return to school committee, and how much, I think we had our last meeting last month in July, and how much you guys have done since the announcement. I am blown away. So thank you for that. And basically my question that I've been getting from a lot of parents, it has to do with the remote learning. And just wondering when the timetable, like, you know, other school boards I've seen have released like a set scheduled timetable that, you know, parents who are keeping their kids at home with the remote learning, it's not going to be like the spring where it was just where they were uploading work on Google Classroom for the most part. Like, is there going to be a timetable with like a structured day? And if so, when is that going to be released?
Hello? I can jump in. Okay. I can jump in and, yep. And answer that question. So we are working. We are working on a model for our remote learning in terms of bringing. First of all, we're working on the numbers based on the pre-registration survey. Yep. So we'll be finishing the pre-registration survey as soon as we finalize after hopefully tomorrow night with Committee of the Whole and on Wednesday. What our in-class model looks like and then what the remote learning model looks like, so we can go back to parents just to solidify some of those numbers. Once we have those numbers, we are working on bringing together the numbers across remote learning, not school by school, but centrally. Uh-huh. Many of the other districts, as if you're looking online, are going to that central virtual school idea, so we can coordinate across schools when we only have a couple of kids in one school or one grade. And so as soon as we get that organized, we will be able to create class lists for teachers. We have to assign teachers to the different classes, and we're working on those teachers that need to be accommodated that can't be back in schools, as well as other teachers that would choose to teach fully remotely. But to your point, I just want to reiterate, yes, you're right. It's not going to look like remote learning did from April until June. Mm-hmm. We have already given out rough ideas of what the online experience will look like. And in the PPM 164 that came out last week, it was very specific about the times for the, whether we call it synchronous learning or live interactive learning, where students, depending on the grade level they're in, will be engaged with instruction. And okay. So that will all be timetabled and shared with families that have chosen to go remote.
Okay, and that was you answered my follow-up question, just like, is there going to be a minimum number of synchronous learning where the kids can have check-ins? And because I think that was the biggest concern for parents, is that there were some parents that told me that their teachers didn't do any check-ins It was just, you know, loading it on the Google Classroom on Monday and expecting the assessment to be handed in on Friday. So just making sure to see what that obviously looked like. Okay, thank you.
Great. I think Melissa's next up. Melissa, do you want to, I think you had a few questions in there, so you might as well just do have them all now. Melissa, do you hear me? I don't know if you...
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, now we can.
Okay, great. So I have two groups of questions, but at this point, I'm just going to ask the questions around the IPERACs, SEPERACs, and assessments. So perhaps I'm not understanding the slides. These are questions I've been asking for 4 months. This is the first I've heard an answer, and it sounds to me like none of these have occurred except for a handful of high priority assessments over the summer. So I'm wondering if you could clarify that, and if none of these have occurred, what are the plans to have last year's IPRCs, SEPRCs, and assessments caught up, and how quickly will that happen?
I'm not sure who's going to be answering that. Is it going to be Angela or Kathy?
Or I thought Angela was taking this question. I'm not sure.
Angela, if you're talking, we can't hear you.
Oh, sorry, you guys froze, so I wasn't sure. I couldn't.
Yeah,
you got,
now we can hear you.
Okay. So sorry, Melissa. I you cut off for me. So I think the last thing I heard you ask was around the summer assessments. So
I have a cluster of questions about the IPRCs, SEPRCs, and assessments. My primary concern, because of the much larger numbers, being about the IPRCs and SEPRCs, if I'm understanding your numbers correctly. So without me asking the individual questions, the gist of it is, I've been asking these questions for 4 months, and it sounds like nothing has progressed. This is the first that I'm hearing about it. I'd like to know, what are the plans to catch these students up, and how quickly?
So in regards to IPRCs, we did do IPRCs the months of April, May, and June. There were approximately 107 assessments that were not complete that our psychologists managed to work through over the summer, and now they are complete. And so those assessments will go back to the schools and to the families, and if in fact they meet the criteria, they will then move forward in an IPRC. In regards to SEPRCs, so SEPRCs, as we know, is a TDSB procedure, and those two will continue. As we know, SEPRCs, there is a SEPRC review that we were hoping to start last year. We could not because we had to pivot our attention to the school closures and then supporting schools and the reopening. So we have not delved into the SEPRC review. So SEPRCs will continue as is, ensuring that understanding that principals who are entering this new September, this new space, will have so much on their plate to ensure the health and safety of all our students. But what we're saying is, if a SEPRC comes in for a student with complex medical needs, that has to be done. We cannot compromise a student and say, sorry, you need to stay home because the home school will not be able to support that student's needs. If you're asking about SEPRCs for gifted students,
gifted and other students who don't have complex needs.
Right. So again, though we have not gone through the SEPRC review, if the school can accommodate in the flurry of return to school, making sure that week one, week two, busing, making sure that the social distancing and all that stuff is happening. If that can be accommodated, then schools can move forward with it. Our hope is, as the school year begins, we can delve into the SEPRC process, engage SEAC to get feedback, engage school principals, families, and communities to get their input on their thoughts around how to proceed with the SEPRCs. As I shared earlier, I remember sharing some data with in regards to the SEPRCs. We want to make sure that we are true to its original purpose, but we're not there yet. So that is something that we will hopefully move toward, and maybe not. We'll wait to see what the families and SEAC advise. But for September, we'll move forward as is with IPRCs and SEPRCs, making sure that we can accommodate the health and safety, the wellness of our principals, ensuring that what needs to be done gets done. But if a student shows up with complex needs, that SEPRC has to happen because we can't keep kids at home. We just can't keep that. That goes back to that barrier that we were talking about. We can't have those types of barriers. So for SEPRCs, for students with complex needs, that has to happen.
Okay, so that's great, and I understand all of that, and I'm glad that you're working toward it. Thank you. You did send me some numbers a few months ago, which I replied saying I wasn't sure if I fully understood it, and I know you're busy. You didn't have a chance to respond. So if I could just clarify, it sounded to me there's about 700 students who would have had IPRCs or SEPRCs last year, but those were suspended due to COVID. So normally those kids would have received their placement or their IEPs, et cetera, before the first day of school, like really before the end of June. I'm wondering, do we still have about 700 of those students? Is there more or less? And how can we work to help these students be placed or supported quickly so that this very tumultuous start of the school year isn't even more difficult and stressful for them?
So that 700, I can see the chat now. So we've worked through IPRCs that were on our list were all the priority ones have been completed, as I shared. As we move into once our consultants are back and we get the updated information of students who require IPRCs, that's when we'll have that information. But that 700, we worked through that. So it was the only ones that we were waiting for were the 107 of assessments that were incomplete.
Okay, so this is great news. Could I just clarify, because I'm really confused based on what I saw before. What I was hearing a few months ago is there was about 1,600 high priority ones that were completed last year. And it seemed there was about 700 lower priority, but still each one is a student with concerns and needs who had not been completed. Are you saying those 700 from last year have now been completed?
From my understanding, yes. I'm going to defer to Janine because she's got the numbers.
Oh, that's great news. If it is, you guys should share great news earlier. Anyway,
okay, sorry, go ahead.
If Janine doesn't have that information right now, I don't want to keep people waiting. I would really appreciate a follow-up afterwards.
Yeah. So just to be clear, we worked through all of them. It was only 107 that we had to stop because we did not have those assessments. So now those assessments have been done. And so we're just now waiting to see if those assessments would have met criteria. Then in September, it's business as usual, where we get all the new requests for IPRCs and we start fresh.
That's great news. I really appreciate that. And if Janine wouldn't mind following with me afterwards just to confirm, I'd very much appreciate it. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Melissa and Angela. So Steve, you had a few questions in the chat. Would you want to just see if we can answer your questions as well? Can you just repeat them?
Sure. Two basic questions. One is how many masks or what is the number of masks that teachers are allowed per day? It's question one.
So they're allowed 2 surgical masks per day.
Okay, what kind of mask would that be, surgical mask? Is that, are those N95s?
I believe so. Patrick, are you on the line? Yeah, he did text that he had to also leave. So my understanding is the surgical masks are the N95s.
Okay, 2 a day. Okay, thank you. And my other quick question is, why is the TDSB still allowing refusal to admit to be applied to students? I brought this up with Brendan Brown 2 years ago, and his answer was, well, it's in the act, we have to. I'm sorry, I still find that the most unacceptable, intolerable answer imaginable. No, we don't. So I'd like to know why we still allow refusal to admit to be applied to students. It doesn't have to be answered now, but it has to be answered soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. And I will ensure that I follow up with Patrick to confirm that they're N95s. All I know is they're surgical, but I will confirm N95. And thank you for sharing that piece around refusal to admit. And our goal is to work very closely with schools so that that does not happen for our students. But thanks for sharing.
And if okay. I could just add, Steve, I appreciate that, and I don't want us to ever forget the advocacy of SEAC for this. I think it's really important, and I think the point of including that is to ensure that the work that has been done over the last several years to create the procedure, the information to principals that this should not be happening, that if there's issues in a school that they work with the family, they work with their superintendent. The point of including it tonight was to hopefully signal to SEAC, but to others, that we haven't forgotten this, even in the middle of a pandemic, that we are still committed to having students in school. So I just wanted to let you know that is still a commitment of the board.
Thank you. I do appreciate that it is still on the radar. And I guess the next step is to convince the Board of Trustees to request the ministry to change it, the Education Act, or the Board of Trustees to recommend and make a decision that no, this board doesn't do that. Because as David has mentioned several times in the past, Leposky, there is nothing a student can do that would not be justified under a suspension or an expulsion. Refuse, and I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. Olga, I think you had a quick question. Do you want to?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So my question was around, so will a student who's on, I'm thinking in terms of high school student, will a student who's on 100% remote learning, will they still have access to professional support? So like the social workers or psychologists?
Yes, absolutely. We want to make sure that they will have access to all supports. It would be done remotely and through an AODA platform.
Okay, and would that connection be through their regular homeschool then?
So if they're remote, we're still trying to sort out what the positioning for the remote school would look like. So whichever teacher is attached to that student, if the teacher in collaboration with the family, say for example, wish to pursue a social worker, then that teacher would follow up with the next steps in regards to SST and getting the appropriate supports in place for the child.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, something happened with my chat. So I think Nora, I'm gonna ask you to take over the speaker list.
I'm just scanning through.
I think you were next actually. So why don't you say what you want to say and then we'll move on.
Sure. I guess I had a few questions too. So one of mine was, are we going to be emphasizing that refusal to admit process one during those 3 days, Angela? So when everybody is at school and we're doing conversations about social distancing, is it going to be explained that students who have special education needs that would prevent them from understanding the implications of social distancing, is that going to be explained explicitly? Not kind of working through it, like explicitly stated while the whole staff's in the room?
Absolutely, Nora. And that's why I need to reach out to our CX subcommittee so I can get down to the nitty gritty of things like you just shared. So who's overseeing the professional for the first 3 days, we will absolutely ensure that this is included. As I said, one of the barriers that David brought forth in that report are critical. And I think we all need to make sure that each of those barriers are addressed so that we can set these kids up for success. So the answer to that question is yes, it has to land in our support and not only like during those PA days, but in communication, like part of our communication to the staff, to our system, that will have to be pen and paper, like on a communication for them to have so that there is no excuses. If for whatever reason you missed that PA day, here's yet another way for you to ensure that you have this information. So, yeah.
I just worry about work refusals and the Ministry of Labor and then the whole nightmare that brings on with staffing and people not being willing to work with students. So I'm just hoping that's really stated publicly. And then I guess my other question is going to be, so are we holding ISP offers if those students choose to be online initially? Are we holding those offers available for students who choose not to attend in face-to-face but are online?
So more information is coming out in regards to how that is going to look like. And so offering ISP classes face-to-face and offering ISP classes remotely, we will have to make sure that that is an option, right? We don't want any student to lose out on their option because of these circumstances. So we are going to continue to try our best to ensure that that they don't lose their ISP spot.
Okay, and sorry, I have two more. One other one was EAs. Will students who would have been in the mainstream, like would have been in a regular class with EA support, what happens with them virtually?
So if they're in the ISP remote class with a teacher, it'll also be staffed with a support staff.
No mainstream.
If
they're in the mainstream class with the EA support and they choose to be online?
That's right. So they too will then have support. So if it's on their IEP that they have some kind of a support and assistance, it will have to be part of whether it's the synchronous or asynchronous part, check and connect. So they will have to be part of it. Absolutely.
Well, and then the last one's an intersectionality question with maybe more of an inner city kind of a thing in special education. But for the kids who won't have materials in their homes, like the kids who won't have any materials in their homes, are we going to make kits and things of like crayons, yada, yada, that kind of stuff? Because some families won't have that.
So that's a great question, Nora. And that's exactly what we did for our summer school program. Susan Moulton was our CAP who led that. And so we created kits. She actually helped deliver them for like door-to-door service practically just to help and make sure these kids have these kits. We're not sure if we're going to be doing that again, and maybe we will. So then again, that's the conversation with our subcommittee. Thus far, what we did discuss was based on, again, case by case, the teacher, whether it's a face-to-face, the remote teacher, would be providing the resources through the school, and then the school, and we would support the school figuring out how then to have it delivered either to the family, or if the family can pick it up, again, case by case, but making sure that if the students or the family do not have those tools, that whatever we can do to support it, because we don't want equity to be a barrier.
Great, thanks. I think Isabella was next.
Hi, Isabella.
Hello. Okay, great. So I'm actually pleasantly surprised with these updates. And originally I had many more questions to ask, but they have been answered as we were going through, as you were going through the presentation. But I did want to bring up just three issues that specifically concern students who are medically fragile, and this has to do with students who, for example, have ventilators and have to be suctioned. They call them aerosol children. Or because they every time they're suctioned, the particles, the saliva particles just fly all over the place. So on one hand, they're extreme spreaders. And because they also are medically fragile, they also are at a higher risk of getting an infection. The virus infection. So, as another SIAC member asked about the whether the surgical masks are the same as N95, and I looked it up, they're not. But I also wanted to emphasize that a lot of these students would quite likely need a nurse, and I can't imagine that you could have them in a classroom with other students who, for example, are other special needs students who don't have the same fragility and who are not don't spread the particles. So I was I'm saying this because I was speaking to two concerned parents from Beverly, and so one thing that they were asking is whether these students who are, especially students who are on respirators, whether they would be put together in the same classroom as to protect other children, but also those children as well, those students. And they indeed would need I would say a much more advanced the personal or PPE. So this is kind of one question, because you did discuss medically fragile students, but when we're talking about some of our students, Nicole's child, Alexa. If she gets a cold, she usually ends up in ICU. So for some of these kids, conditions that, that you wouldn't think twice with your children, I would think with my son, just having a cold, he wouldn't need to, it wouldn't get as advanced. So have there been any discussion about this? Sorry.
So I think, so two things, I'll pass it to Janine in a moment. So Janine does meet regularly with Lynn, the nurses, to discuss our students with complex needs, in particular the ones who use the respirators. Before I pass it to her, I will share that I've added it to my notes to bring it up to my meeting with the congregated site principals, because this didn't come up where we would put all of these students in the same class, but I will share that with them. Janine, did you want to share anything about your meetings with our community care providers?
Sure. Good night, all. I hope this works for at least a little bit. So I have actually had this very conversation today with with Lynn, as well as there were Toronto Public Health and representation from SickKids. There were also three of our congregated site principals online, and this exact conversation came up where we talked about the aerosols and the suctioning. And generally speaking, typically staff, care nurse that comes into the schools wear protective gear, and they would have and should have already worn such as the mask, medical grade mask, or shield. That is what is expected of them now, working with students as well on a regular basis. There was no talk around N95 specific medical, because what their concern was as well as is that the students that are coming to school, they would have gone through some screening. And so unless there is a child that has COVID symptoms or anything like that, then that's where the extra precautions would come in. But they are developing a protocol and it will be shared with school principals. And I could also share it with SEAC as well. We just went through the first phase. There's a three more meetings that are planned. So to look at specific situations like this, and as well as the nurses coming in into schools wearing and having appropriate PPE as needed.
Thanks, Janine.
I can just jump in. I think that the answer to this question, Isabella, is we, in cases like this, we take direction from Toronto Public Health, we take direction from the Lynn, and we are working, as Janine said, with SickKids. This is a really important issue that you've brought up, and we are not the medical experts, so that's why we take direction from the medical experts.
Okay, that's very useful. Can I just, I'll be very quick, I won't be long-winded, because you're talking about Lynn, and I just wanted to also make you aware of the fact that presently the Ministry of Health is not recognizing remote learning for students with complex medical needs as counting towards their nursing hours. So those parents who decide that, well, maybe it's better to keep our child at home, are going to lose nursing hours because it's not recognized. And I wonder whether with COVID and with the fact that other, the board and other places are recognizing virtual learning and students are getting their courses done, whether, maybe whether something can be done to make sure that those parents will not lose the Lynn nursing hours.
We'll take that question back. Thanks, Isabella.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Great. Okay, so the next on the list was Aileen.
Hi, everyone. And I just want to thank everyone, honestly, on the work, and I know how quick everyone has to react to all the changes that's required by the ministry. And I want to focus on mental health and well-being. Thank you, Marcia, for presenting your thoughts and what's already in place. And I think already should have two questions to Marcia, but probably this is a bigger question across the board because it actually does span to a number of our programs, like regular programs and children or students actually in those elementary and secondary programs. So I want to know, and are there any anticipation of a jump in requests? Because I know for a fact that now they are at home or not in school, but with the transition of changes, and I know Marcia already covered some of those, kind of expect it going to be a jump in those mental health needs in school. And also for those who decided to stay at home, I don't know whether the mental health support is going to still maintain or it's going to be increased. So that it's my two questions across the board. But also specifically, I know of two programs that are quite close to my heart, actually, because they have a co-op options as far as the one at Holland Blueview, the project search situation, probably besides Marcia, other staff members could answer that and may have more up-to-date information. And the other one, it's partnership with CAMH, which is the RISE program. I know there are not a lot of students in there, but the ones in there, they have a lot of complex mental health needs. And I know for a fact that according to my connections with CAMH, they really wanted to partner with our board more, but they are actually at capacity. So actually for Marcia, I actually asked a question, do you have increased partnership with CAMH or yourself? It's doing handling all these calls alone. So I'm concerned because I heard from my two LC1, LC2 families that I am in partnership with through Holland Blueview together with Sick Kids. I heard that link when Isabella mentioned about those nursing hours. That question came up through my advisory committee together with Holland Booth and Sick Kids as well. So we want to know if that the ECPP program there, it's happening with the increased hours or if parents are decided to have the ECPP children at home for many ways that can the nursing staff be coming on board to their home. So great. Sorry, there's a lot of things happening.
So
here. Yeah.
So you have several questions, Aline. So yeah. I don't know who wants to answer them. But
Marcia.
So
Marcia.
So I can answer the part about the ECPP.
So, okay. Thanks, Joy.
Yeah, the RISE program is one of the partnership programs that we have with CAMH. Right now it's located on the college campus, but mid-year next year we'll be moving to Queen Street to join the other programs that we have in partnership with CAMH. So we have the Youth Day Hospital, we have the REACH program, we have the concurrent unit, as well as the RISE program. In partnership with CAMH, there's no decrease in service in terms of any of those programs or any of the other ECPP programs. They're all going to be continuing. There, as far as I know, for secondary programs last year, there were very, very few that were actually full. There was space in most of the secondary programs at many points during last year. Most of the elementary ones were full. So I'm not sure where you got the information that RISE was at capacity.
So that's the reason why I want to, you know, hear from you and maybe offline that I can shoot you some specific information because the individuals actually too, they are ready for co-op and they did a little bit of co-op during before COVID, prior to COVID, but now things are on hold and they're really concerned because of the age coming towards 21. So that's what I wanted to confirm with you. But anyways, I know that you would be the person to connect with, then I would do it offline with you, Joy, if that's sure, okay.
Angela, you were somebody else was gonna finish off the rest of the
question. Her mental health question, Marcia.
I think I understood the mental health question. We're providing service to all the requests that we've gotten, and it's not been, this summer we were probably a bit lower than usual. We will be providing service, as Angela said earlier, through the regular routes, the referrals through the school team meetings. We have been working with a number of community partners. Most of the ones I've talked to are in the same state as we are, that a lot of it will be done virtually, and trying to connect with the students that way. We're hoping here at TDSB to provide some in-person service and running some groups in the schools. We have been involved with search and with the co-op programs, and I haven't had any recent contact, but I know once we pulled most of the kids from co-op, they did shut down, although we have started having preliminary discussion about a number of those type of programs, and will it be safe to allow the students to go back to co-op experiences.
Right.
We really feel it's important, and actually we're looking at increasing staff through our OTPT to search into some of the co-op and experiential ones.
Thank you so much. And then, Marcia, I also have specific questions on that from families, and I'll probably take it on offline with you as well, if that's okay.
That would be super.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Marcia.
Thank you so much, Lee. Okay, we're getting close to 9, but we have a few more people on the list, so let's just keep going. And I think, Melissa, you had another question about Speckhead. Melissa, are you there? You had another question?
Sorry, I didn't realize I was next, so I had to unmute. Okay. My question is just basically around the special education plan. My understanding was work on it was suspended in the spring due to COVID. I completely understand. I'm just wondering what happened with it, because every year there's a July 31 deadline for completing it, submitting it, getting it approved subsequently by the ministry. And I'm wondering what is the status of that, and more specifically, were any changes submitted, because we didn't have a chance to really talk about them, and if there are any changes that either were approved or are being requested, I'm hoping that we could receive a list of those.
Hi, Melissa. Yes, so we did the updates to it. We tried to, the updates that I shared at one of our CAC meetings to make it family friendly, easy to read, easy to access. So those have been done, updated. We are now just trying to work through with communications to actually send and upload, because they're just doing whatever communication does in the sense of making it look presentable. But in regards to the input that we added, one of the key features that we added was ensuring that we added equity, anti-racism, and anti-oppression lens throughout. One of the pieces is that we want to change the narrative of special education, where students who perhaps don't fit a person's perception of what it means to behave in a classroom doesn't get automatically sent to the special ed track and sent to SST and put on an IEP and so on and so forth. But really the push now is, what are we as a staff doing differently in the classroom to ensure that we are meeting the student's needs as opposed to the student meeting our needs? So we try to embed a lot of language and actions for the school to follow up through the equity, oppression, and anti-racism. So that was, I would say, the biggest change that we've added in there with second, and the second is making sure that it's easier to access. So The third piece is, like I said, it hasn't gone posted yet because communications is busy now with this whole remote to learning, return to school. So once, it is ready to go, we're just waiting for them to upload. And then we could also then pull that share with SEAC.
That's great. All of those changes sound terrific. My concern was a little bit more on if there were any substantive changes scheduled throughout on process, criteria, any of that stuff.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm just asking because we had a bad experience with some of your predecessors previously, and I think it would be better if we knew in advance what was happening instead of parents finding out the hard way and we're a little bit blindsided. So I'm wondering if there were any of those changes, and if so, if we might get a list of those so we know.
So the one major change that we're hoping to land, but we did not input it into the actual plan, was around the IEPs, and I met over the summer to discuss the motions with Diane in regards to the IEPs. So she helped unpack some of those requests within that motion. And so the hope is that now this spec ed plan is actually divided into sections. And I think I shared that back in May or June. So now when we start SEAC in the fall, we actually say we're going to meet and focus just on section A. And then the next month, section B, and it'll be so much easier to focus on the spec ed plan and any updates, because now it's just laid out so much clearer and easier to access. So once you'll see, once the committee sees it, you'll see exactly what I mean. But like I said, I remember presenting this and sharing it with CIA. So it's broken into sections, and then we'll have a chance in the fall to go through section as a subcommittee.
Oh, that's great. And I'm on that committee, so I look forward to hearing about that. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you. All right. Just a quick update for everybody. We are close to, we only have a few more speakers left, so hopefully we...
It's David.
I know. I'm going to get to you, David. I'm just giving everybody an update, and you're next. Don't worry. I'm just telling everybody where we're at. So we just have a few more people. David, you're next. David, myself, Jordan, and Isabella. Those are on the speakers list. So that's probably where we'll finish up at. Hopefully that will get all our questions answered. So David, go for it.
Okay, can you hear me right now?
We can.
Okay, good. Hi, everybody. This has all been really great information. I appreciate the amazing work being done, as does everybody. A piece of information and then two questions. The information, Angela referred to the report which I circulated to you on Friday. Just so you know, as you all know, the after years of advocacy, the provincial government agreed to develop an education accessibility standard under the AODA, and I'm on the Standards Development Committee. After a lot of pressure last spring, we got them to set up a COVID subcommittee, which I've been on. And we've been working very extensively over the summer. Think of it as like a provincial level version of the group that SEAC has had working with staff. And our committee has representation both from the disability side and from the school board side. At very senior levels. So we've been really working hard on coming up with sort of an action plan. That's what we turned over to the province three and a half weeks ago, and we made public last Friday. Sadly, the government has not announced a plan of action. And by the way, none of this came to them out of the blue, because we've had at least two meetings with Stephen Lecce, the minister. We've had lots of interaction with staff and so on at the ministry. But I'm really delighted that Angela and the board are looking at it and seeing what can be done. There's lots in there that can and should be done. And to the extent we field test things, please feed it back to me because I will feed it back provincially, because what we will be doing is very shortly trying to turn those COVID-related recommendations, which are short-term, into recommendations that should be included in an education accessibility standard to deal with emergencies, because we've learned a lot now and we want to make some longer-term recommendations. Any ideas from that document that you think would be helpful long-term, just flip me an email or give me a call. Two questions are, number one, the information we got tonight was fabulous. I don't know if this was recorded, but if it wasn't, it's too bad. And if it was, it should be posted online because this should be available not just to us, but to the 50,000 families who've got students with special ed needs at the board. I'm interested to know what is being done to explain to those families who are desperate to know how to navigate this situation, what to do, what to expect, and so on. So that's number one. One of our recommendations was that there is a real pressing need for user-friendly information now, and I don't mean PowerPoints and stuff like that. I mean something somebody can log on and watch that will explain it in plain language and so on. And if possible, that could be then translated to multiple languages given the community that we serve. So that's number one. And number two, I'm interested to know what's being done about GYM. Is GYM going to take place? If so, what are you going to do about the showers and stuff? And specifically, is swimming going to take place? Are schools that have pools going to be operating those pools, or is that going to be closed? Because I'm very worried that the whole change room and all that stuff is just a high risk area for COVID spread. I'm going to sign off. I'm going to listen to the answers, and unfortunately, I got to leave the meeting. But thank you to everybody. And the only other PS is I gather Alexander wasn't able to join the meeting, so we can congratulate him in person when he comes to our next SEAC meeting. I know he plans to stay on SEAC, even though he's chair, but I am ecstatic that he's the new chair of the board, and I think we're going to have a real ally in raising special ed issues at the board level. Anyway, back to the staff. Thank you to everybody on staff, to Diane and Nora and everybody for doing such a great job steering this. And over to you.
Okay, so Leanne, can you confirm if you recorded this?
Yes, I have.
Perfect. Okay, so we could upload this for sure and send a communication. Okay. So
thank you. What you might want to do is to you can do this. You can delete the Q&A part just because people may not want their might not have been contemplating that. But I think everything up to then, it's up to you, but
archive. Yeah. Thank you.
And then once you save it, you can post it on YouTube and you can caption it later if you want.
Okay. And also in regards to how we are communicating this, I've been attending ward forums and sharing the special education piece, not the full 2 hours, really high level thinking around special education. And then, you know, through learning network superintendents, fielding questions, and providing direction and support that way. In regards to Jim, Wendy, are you on the line, Wendy Terry? Or maybe Kathy, do we know?
I can jump in and we can find out more details. I believe that the city pools that are open will be the pools that we will be using. Our CAP, Kurt McIntosh, I did check in with him a couple of weeks ago just to find out where we were with the swim programs, and that was my understanding, but we can get clarification. But to your point, David, the idea of physical distancing and cleanliness and the spread is definitely something that we will address with the use of the pools.
And there was a third question, David. I'm sorry, I didn't write
that. Oh, I just asked about Jim generally. Oh, yeah, about Jim generally and about.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I can address the phys ed. I thought when you said Jim, I was thinking JIM at the beginning.
So I'm showing my age.
That's right. We will have guidelines for the safe use of the gymnasium and how physical education programs should be running. We are using provincial as well as national guidelines and some of the SickKids guidelines with shared materials, including phys ed materials. So that will all be part of the guidelines that will be shared with school staff in the coming weeks, just to make sure that we are all following what has been, we're taking from researched information, and we're just not making it up.
Okay, thanks very much.
Great. Okay, I think it's my turn. I have several questions, but they're all related to the remote learning. One of the first things before I start, I just wanted to thank all staff. I've been not only, there's been so much going on over the last couple of weeks, and I've had the fortune to attend a lot of the sessions. And I just can't imagine the amount of work that you guys have done. Some of the sessions have been like hours, like 8 hours at a time kind of thing. It was crazy. But anyway, the good news is the thing I found interesting about those is I was able to hear a lot of concerns from families about all kinds of stuff. And Speckett, of course, Angela, I saw you at a few meetings. Great job. So I just wanted to fill in the gaps, I guess, of things that weren't discussed and that I think are still an issue. Again, mostly around remote learning. So I think you mentioned that there's going to be inclusion. So the people who are on IEPs or getting special education are going to be in the classrooms, supported remotely. So if they have somebody, a support teacher who comes in the classroom, I guess they'll come in the remote classroom, maybe in small groups or something like that. They're going to have asynchronous and synchronous based upon the new PM that just came out. What I wanted to find out was for the how will that work? Because with the new my big concern is synchronous learning, from what I understand, has to be a certain number of hours, 225 hours or something like that, and I'm concerned about the kids who can't focus and can't be on a computer for that long. Is there any flexibility going to be given to those students? And also, how are they going to integrate with the regular classroom if they're going to have a different schedule than the other classroom? So I'm just trying to visualize what that remote piece is going to kind of look like for those people who are getting support and integrated and asynchronous and synchronous. Can you kind of give me a general sense of what that might look like with schedules and stuff?
I can jump in. Diana's Kathy.
Yeah.
So it's 225 minutes in a day, mm-hmm. a regular instruct, not 225 hours. Although some of our days
feel like
225 hours. We have 300 minutes in a regular instructional day. And so the expectation was, how do we break down, and I don't have PPM 164 in front of me, so I don't have the hours, but, again, that'll be part of, sharing and guidelines. You know, we've said all the way along that including synchronous or live interactive learning can take lots of different formats, and it's not just a child sitting in front of a computer screen. We also know that there was a real debate between April and June about the rigor of online learning, and to be honest, we heard anywhere from it was too much expectations of, you know, screen time to not enough. So we know that we have to figure out what works for individual students and many students. And so when we talk about the ministry talks about the number of minutes a day for students based on grade. And we know that there's a whole lot of other criteria that we need to be looking at beyond just the grade of the student. There's developmental capabilities, there's, you know, personality, there's issues around access to computers at home. So we have guidelines in place and parameters or frameworks, but clearly if a family chooses to go fully remote, they will be able to work with the teacher that's assigned to that remote cohort to figure out what will work best for that child in terms of FaceTime with the teacher, with their classmates, what small group might look like as well as large group, and of course, independent work. So, you will see guidelines, and then within those guidelines, we'll have teachers, as they always do with individual students, work to figure out what will best meet their needs. And of course, with IEPs, I think we said it at the top of the evening over 2 hours ago, is that we will make sure that IEPs are reviewed and that will reflect the accommodations that are needed in the new context where that student is learning, whether it be in a smaller class size cohort in person or bricks and mortar, or a student that has an IEP that has opted for fully remote. We are going to have to review what an IEP says and what an accommodation might look like.
Yeah. Okay. That was really helpful. That's the word I was looking for is flexible. I just didn't know what the ministry saying you needed this much, if it had to be a specific amount, because I agree. I think synchronous is critical because that's what everybody's been asking for. But then again, you kind of have to go by individuals, right? And knowing that, do you know, two more things on that note. If they're synchronous, let's just say a student is, I don't know, on a session, a whole group classroom, and it's 40 minutes and they're zoned out after, you know, 20 minutes or 25 minutes. Do you know if they'll have access to like a recording of it in case they miss some of it, or will they be able to even do recordings at all for people who may miss some of the whole class sessions? Is that possible with the technology?
Teachers are not going to record every single second of their sessions with students. And so I think it will be, we have talked to teachers about how they will record sessions, how they can post their own videos that they've recorded, or other kind of videos that can be posted where students can go in on their own asynchronous time or independent time. So I'm not going to say that every second will be recorded. It's going to be based on what's going on in the classroom and what each student will need to be able to do that independently. Okay.
Great. And again, the flexibility, the fact that they know they have the options. Perfect. I wanted to know that. And the very last question I have is more for the parents. One of the things I don't think has really come up too much in any of the sessions I've gone to is the parent. I think it's great that we're doing a lot more synchronous, because then the parents who were actually acting as teachers before have a little bit of a break, because, you know, they were pretty much the teachers before when it was all asynchronous. However, there's still a good portion of the time that they're going to need to support their kids at home. Is there anybody that's putting together any type of guides or reference guides as to how, for almost like parent guides, how they can support their students during these asynchronous times? Because again, I think about so many creative things that can be done, like, you know, breaks and physical stuff going on and all kinds of stuff, and they just may not know how to do it. And I'm just wondering if anybody has any kind of anything like that, any thought to putting a guide together for parents just to help them out with their remote side when they're actually doing it. Yeah.
Thanks, Leanne.
Janine,
do you want to take that one? People aren't on mute.
I mean, that's something that we can certainly think about. I know that we've been working behind the scenes around little videos around the IEP to help parents. So in terms of guidelines, I think we also have to take the lead of the classroom teachers working with the parents as well around what activities, what are reasonable, what are some of the IEP goals that can be done remotely. So that's a conversation I think could happen with the schools.
Okay, and so Janine, I can probably talk to you offline because if you're interested, I might be able to help you with some of that because I'm doing some research and stuff. So if you're interested, I can, you know, if you want, I can maybe connect with you offline and we can chat further. But that's great.
Okay. No worries. Okay.
That's all for me. And is there any? Oh, Jordan, you're next.
Okay, sorry, I was trying to figure out how to unmute myself for a second. So I think a lot of my questions have been answered. That's the benefit of going last. But I have big concerns about safety plans, particularly for kids who may be flight risks. What happens in the case a child gets, say, off campus? What is the, or even just outside, or even into another classroom that they're not supposed to be in? What are the plans to address those concerns with regards to social distancing, with regards to health and safety? What's the follow-up that occurs in such a case?
Did I hear you, Jordan, say if the child runs off the school property?
As an example. But maybe that's too large an example. Maybe even they just get into another classroom.
So student, well, that's okay, large or not. I mean, depending on the behaviors that are being exhibited, different supports would be called in. So if the child is feeling anxious, again, in collaboration with the family, what supports can we offer? If the child is putting himself or herself in danger or others in danger, then do we explore the possibility of a safety plan, again in collaboration with the family? So we try to do it case by case, making sure that we understand the context and whatever supports we can offer, then we will.
Okay, so but how do we address this in a world of COVID that we're now entering in September?
Well, see, yeah, and that's where we come to, what we don't want to happen is the schools or someone to default to a work refusal or a refusal to admit or something like that. So that's what our goal is to, whenever something like that happens, that it's all hands on deck. We call the special education consultants, coordinator, CAPS, whatever we need to do to work through the principal, through the teacher, to see what supports we need from for this child.
Okay.
And a plan has to be made. What we don't want to happen is, sorry, the kid has to go home. That's not okay.
Okay, because I'll be frank, and I think other people have echoed this sentiment. I have fear of refusal to admit in relation to COVID, in relation to our special needs children, and what that means for September. And I don't envy, frankly, the position that you're in as senior staff at the TDSB, because I think it's a concern. I think it's an issue that's going to arise, possibly with very early in the year.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jordan. You know, we're going to take that back. It's on our radar. That's why it had its own slide. So I will take that back and we'll continue to work through this and follow up, even as Nora said, to make sure it lands in part of our professional learning that happens the first 3 days, as well as a communication to our principals.
Okay, and thank you everyone else for addressing the numerous other questions I had.
Yeah, okay, thanks Jordan. So after, that's a long evening of, and obviously I think everybody's really impressed, ladies, with all the work all the staff have done and the amount of collaboration that you've put into coming up with plans when there's so many thousands and thousands of moving parts. I think it's really astonishing all the work you've done. So I think the committee is relieved to know that we may not have been aware, but you haven't let anything drop. And then when we do bring concerns forward, you're willing to go back and tweak. I think it's fair for me to say that this has been a huge confidence booster for our committee, probably, at least I can speak for myself, about how hard the two of you are willing to work and the rest of your staff on supporting our kids, how seriously you take what's happening to them right now. So thank you so much, ladies, and everyone who supports you in your work.
My pleasure, Nora. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. And I'll just finish. We had some announcements this week about senior staff change. So many of you will remember Brendan Brown. Brendan was our executive superintendent in leadership and learning a year ago. Brendan's leaving the board to become the director of Toronto Catholic. So we wish Brendan well in his pursuits over across the street in Toronto Catholic. So that will begin at the beginning of September. And then the second announcement we made is I announced my retirement. So I have the next couple of months with TDSB, and then I plan to retire from over 35 years in education. With COVID, I have nowhere to go. So it's not like I could say I've got amazing travel plans. But I just wanted SEAC to be one of the first to hear and hear directly from me that I have loved every minute of my time in TDSB. It has been truly a privilege and an honor to serve the students in Toronto and to work with all of you. To really see your advocacy and how I think for senior staff, we have worked together to value the role and voice of SEAC. And I hope you see it in the work that we do and you hear it from the parents. So I want to thank you. And we still have a couple of months left together, but I just wanted to let you know. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Kathy. Like, you have been a major game changer for us. And our relationship, I think, with the board. I think there certainly is a lot of uncertainty, obviously, at senior team right now. Thank goodness for us, we have Alexander at least somewhere up there. And hopefully we're holding on to Angela for a while.
Yeah, we are in transition. And as soon as I have any more details, you will be one of the first to know for sure in terms of SEAC, and we will make sure that it's as smooth a transition as possible, because it's not just, it's important to me, obviously professionally, personally, but we know it's really important to our families, our students, and our staff, and so we'll make sure that it works.
It would be lovely if there was a chance for a brief overlap where they could attend and see or work with us.
That's what I'm hoping. Definitely. That's when I think of transition, that's going to be part of it. So we'll put that on as part of the plan.
That would be great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. Good night. And good luck with the opening of school for your kids, your family, and the groups that you represent. We are all in this together, and we are really working on some positive transitions for kids. So thanks for all of the things you do.
Thanks very much. And thanks, Diane, for keeping us orderly and keeping me afloat.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Good night. And congrats again, Kathy. Great job.
Thanks, Diane. Okay, good night, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.